It is Tuesday, January 19th, Universal Time, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. Supreme Court says it will have the final say on President Obama's plan to shield millions of undocumented migrants from deportation. One of our reporters gives us the arguments for and against the Obama plan, and Giabi Lee will be here to give us the social media reaction. We'll hear from a UN official about why civilian deaths in Iraq's conflict could be much worse than has been reported. And acid attack victims in India win social acceptance with the help of a new cafe.
I used to cover my face completely. Even my eyes didn't show.
It's all ahead on International Edition. The U.S. Supreme Court said Tuesday it will consider a case challenging President Barack Obama's plan to protect 4 million undocumented migrants from deportation. The president's 2014 executive order is aimed at deferring the deportation of undocumented parents of American-born children and permanent residents. But the Obama order is on hold due to opposition from 26 U.S. states, almost all of them led by Republican governors who often criticize the policies supported by the Democratic president. Earlier, my colleague Susan Yaki asked VOA reporter Carolyn Pursuti about the significance of the Supreme Court stepping into the controversy.
Well, basically, the Supreme Court has decided to hear a challenge to President Obama's executive order to shield more than 4 million immigrants from deportation. Now, these would be immigrants who have U.S.-born children, which make the children American citizens.
What is the president's argument for doing this?
The president's argument is that these are not criminals. These are not the administration's priority for deportation. These are people who could be paying taxes. As long as they have a work permit, as long as they are working, then they can contribute to the nation's economy.
And those who are opposed to it?
Those who are opposed to it say, we are just encouraging other people to enter the United States illegally and continue to stay here, and then we are rewarding them. So that's basically the argument of the Federation for Immigration Reform, the organization known as FAIR.
Nothing happens quickly at the Supreme Court. This could drag on for quite a while.
Absolutely. We aren't expecting the arguments to be heard before the Supreme Court until April, and then a decision won't be made until June.
But this will be a case that's closely watched by many people.
Absolutely, because this will not only affect the 2016 presidential election, but also the president's legacy. He stepped out on a limb, if you will, by making these executive orders, these executive actions, and certainly this was one of the more far-reaching executive orders that he has done. And the fact that the Supreme Court will be making a decision in June clears the way for a decision to be made while the president is in office. Should they rule in favor of the president's deferral program, then these immigrants can stay in this country. Should they rule against it, immediately they would be sent back to their country.
And that was VOA reporter Carolyn Pursuti speaking with International Edition's Susan Yaki. Well, it's time for our social media segment, and as promised, International Edition's Giabi Lee joins me here to tell us what's buzzing online about the upcoming Supreme Court decision. Hey, Gi.
Hi, Michael. So to recap what Carolyn said, the Supreme Court announced Tuesday it will decide the fate of President Obama's immigration action system. House Speaker Paul Ryan, a Republican, was quick to criticize Mr. Obama, and he's on Twitter at Speaker Ryan and sent out this tweet. President Obama's executive amnesty is unconstitutional. I hope hashtag SCOTUS upholds the Fifth Circuit's decision. And retweet to agree.
And SCOTUS is the acronym for the Supreme Court of the U.S.
That is correct. Nearly 200 people shared that tweet in the last 5 hours.
Well, so that's not a huge amount of attention, but in line with the Republican Party's beliefs. What about the other view of this issue?
Michael, actually, there isn't much information about it yet, but I think more people will voice their opinions once the court's decision is out. And in the meantime, Virginia Senator Mark Warner shared his thoughts. He tweeted, I am confident hashtag SCOTUS will support at POTUS, that's the president, decision to use his legal authority to set enforcement priorities. His handle is at Mark Warner. Michael, I also want to recommend our listeners to check out the Pew Research Center's tweet. Its handle is at Pew Research and it shared an infographic. Now, I don't want to give everything away, but the infographic shows who would benefit from the executive actions. One takeaway is that out of the 11.2 million unauthorized immigrants in the United States, almost 6 million people are not eligible. That's almost half of the undocumented immigrants. And before I go, I want to give a shout out to our own Cindy Sane, who sent out this tweet. She wrote, hashtag VOA alert, House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi on SCOTUS. We cannot perpetuate a broken immigration system that tears apart families. She's our congressional correspondent and on Twitter at Cindy Sane. So you can see there is definitely a big difference between the two parties on the issue. Michael?
And it doesn't look like we'll have a consensus anytime soon. But thanks so much, G, for that wrap-up. You can find G on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. She also tweets from our International Edition Twitter account, which is at VOA underscore IE. And of course, I'm there as well. My handle is at Michael underscore Lippin. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Every year, Utz kids eat and drink a whopping 5,543 sugar cubes. That's 22 bags of sugar. That's more than a kid like me weighs.
That's from a British government campaign warning parents about the amount of sugar their kids are consuming. And the campaign offers a free smartphone app that scans barcodes of supermarket items to give an instant readout of the amount of sugar they contain. Dr. Alison Tedstone is with Public Health England.
Children in Britain are eating far too much sugar, three times more than the recommended amount, and that's causing them real harm.
Dr. Tedstone says almost half of Britain's 8-year-olds have tooth decay. A third of 11-year-olds are obese or overweight. Parents say the app is easy to use and helps demonstrate how much sugar is really contained in common grocery items. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
I'm Michael Lippin with VOA's International Edition. A new United Nations report says Iraq's war with Islamic State militants has killed more than 18,800 civilians and wounded more than 36,000 others in an almost 2-year period, ending in October 2015. Lisa Schlein has more on that story from Geneva.
The report is based largely on testimony from victims, survivors, or witnesses of violations, and says that during the period from May to October of last year, nearly 4,000 civilians were killed and more than 7,000 wounded. About half of these deaths took place in the capital, Baghdad. UN human rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani tells VOA, the figures do not fully capture what is happening in Iraq.
These only include the people who were directly killed by violence. This does not include the countless others who have died from the lack of access to basic food, to water, and to medical care. And also bear in mind that the security situation in Iraq prevents us from doing a lot of our work. So really, even the casualty toll of those killed directly by violence could be much higher than what we've managed to document.
UN monitors blame most of these deaths on Islamic State, known also as ISIS and ISIL. It says victims include those perceived as being opposed to the terror group's ideology and rule, such as government civil servants, doctors and lawyers, journalists and tribal and religious leaders. It says women and children are subject to sexual violence, particularly in the form of sexual slavery. The report finds people judged by Islamic State's self-appointed courts are subjected to punishments such as stoning and amputations. It details numerous examples of public executions, including shootings, beheadings, bulldozing, burning people alive, and throwing people off the top of buildings. Shamdasani says some of the incidents amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. She says IS systematically targets ethnic and religious minorities, the most well-known being Yazidis.
They are either forced to convert or be killed. So there is a case to be made that ISIL has the intent to systematically destroy, either in part or in whole, entire communities, which is why we're raising the alarm bell. I mean, this could amount to genocide, which is a serious international crime.
The UN finds pro-government forces also are guilty of human rights violations and abuses and says it has received reports of unlawful killings and abductions perpetrated by those forces. It notes some of these incidents may have been reprisals against supposed IS supporters. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's been 2 months since the Paris terrorist attacks, and some people in France are concerned that they may only be a preview for even deadlier terror strikes to come. In the French capital, local firefighters have been conducting workshops on life-saving first aid techniques that people could use in case that happens. Lisa Bryant attended one of the first sessions and has this report for VOA.
A shootout outside a cafe, chairs overturned, people lying on the ground, some bleeding heavily. A woman calls for emergency services. She has basic first aid training. She's told what to do until help arrives. Stop the flow of blood, move people into positions so they can breathe, move quickly to treat the most serious cases. Such a scenario, facing about a dozen Parisians one recent afternoon, was not real. The group was taking a two-hour class in first aid techniques at a fire station in the city's northern Montmartre neighborhood.
Sur une caserne, il y a deux sessions de formation dans l'après-midi.
Fire station commander Fabien Testa organized the weekly workshops in half a dozen fire stations around the French capital. The course will soon be extended to outlying suburbs. By June, firefighters hope to train about 8,000 area residents in basic life-saving techniques. Last year's terrorist attacks in Paris have lent urgency to their mission. The November 13th assault killed and injured nearly 500 people.
Cette question, elle vient pas a posteriori, c'est des questions qui ont été demandées directement par les Parisiens.
Testa says when firefighters performed first aid at the attack sites, Parisians asked how they could help. The course was designed to show how simple gestures save lives. The course teaches techniques like how to apply a tourniquet or reposition a wounded person so his or her airway stays open and that person can breathe. People practice giving CPR or a cardiac massage on mannequins. The lesson, in a crisis, every minute counts. It's a lesson that's also being taught to civilians elsewhere, amid worldwide fears of more terrorist attacks. Gosha Katula took the training. She spent time in Paris as well as in Brussels, another city affected by last year's attacks.
Now I think many people start to have like a second reflection of what has happened. The reflection, how would I react? What would I do if I see something? We just realized that we really know nothing.
Another Parisian, Loic Kempf, had wanted to take first aid training for some time.
We learned to evaluate first if someone is unconscious or well. And then we tried the heart massage and defibrillator, and then we learn to stop the bleeding.
That knowledge won't stop a future attack, but it will give Kempf the tools to save lives should one occur. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
This is VOA.
Here's science in a minute.
Do you sleep poorly during the work week, but try to make up for it by sleeping in on weekends? A new study from researchers at the University of Chicago finds that having two consecutive nights of sleep, as many do on weekends, has been shown to offset an increased risk of diabetes, which has been associated with a lack of sleep during the work week. Scientists say that getting less sleep, such as 4 or 5 hours a night, even temporarily, can increase the odds of developing diabetes by about 16%, which is about the same increased risk factor for those who are obese. While their work focused on sleep and an increased risk of diabetes, the researchers say further study needs to be conducted regarding other negative health effects of sleep deprivation, such as high blood pressure and various cognitive difficulties. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. India is a country that has long struggled with violence against women, violence that gives it one of the highest rates of acid attacks in the world. Anjana Pasricha reports from the northern Indian town of Agra on a cafe that is giving a new life to acid attack victims by helping them to win social acceptance.
It is another busy morning for the seven acid attack survivors who run Shiro's Hangout in Agra. The cafe opened its doors a year ago. The youngest, 15-year-old Dolly Kumari, had never ventured out after a man who was 20 years older than she chucked acid on her face for spurning his advances.
I used to cover my face completely. Even my eyes didn't show.
After meeting hundreds of customers in the past year, Dolly has lost her fear of showing her face, and this once bright student wants to study again.
Now I have gathered confidence. I have so much courage now, I can say anything to anyone. I too have a life.
New Delhi-based NGO Stop Acid Attacks launched the cafe a year ago after making little headway in getting jobs for victims like Dolly. Most of them are attacked over domestic or property disputes or for rejecting sexual advances or marriage proposals. Alok Dixit, a founding member of the group, says the social isolation that survivors suffer due to their disfigurement is much more painful than the searing pain of the attack. They hope to change this, not through sloganeering and protests, but softly by encouraging them to interact with people.
You cannot ruin a victim's life by ruining their face.
Life is beyond your face, you know, how you look.
The message is getting reinforced through the nearly 10,000 customers who have stepped into Shiro's. The social acceptance has given a renewed sense of purpose to 23-year-old Rupa, whose stepmother threw acid on her in 2008. She wants to become a good fashion designer. Clothes she designs are displayed at the cafe.
Society is slowly accepting and supporting us. They come and meet us and want to know our story, sit and talk to us.
This heartening response has encouraged Stop Acid Attacks to plan three more ventures in New Delhi, Lucknow and Udaipur. It is a small but inspirational step in a country that is stepping up the fight to tackle violence against women. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Agra.
Well, if you'd like to learn more about this story and watch the TV version of Anjana Pasricha's report, go to the Asia page of our website at voanews.com and look for the headline, Acid Attack Survivors Find Strength, Acceptance at Cafe. Well, movie fans are anxiously awaiting Oscars night next month when Hollywood hands out its top annual movie industry honors. Music fans will have something to look forward to on that night as well. My colleague Jim Stevenson reviews the music nominees at the Oscars with VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald.
The Oscars will be given out on February 28th, and we have five nominees in the Best Original Song category, and they include some pretty big names. We'll start out with The Weeknd, Earned It, from 50 Shades of Grey.
Great song.
It is a great song, and I'm glad to see The Weeknd in the running. He's a fast-rising talent. We have Manta Ray by J. Ralph and Anthony from a documentary called Racing Extinction. The singer for this song, Anthony, is from an English group called Anthony and the Johnstons. He is a fantastic vocalist. He's not very well known, but to me, it's a once-in-a-generation voice, and I think it would be incredibly cool to see him hoist the Academy Award.
Definitely.
We also have Simple Song Number 3 by David Lang from the movie Youth. This is a classical composition. I guess this has to be considered the dark horse of the field. We have Till It Happens to You by Lady Gaga, which she co-wrote with Diane Warren, who's an extremely well-known pop songwriter. And this is actually a very powerful song. It's from a documentary on campus rape called The Hunting Ground. And it's about, you know, sexual attacks. Mm-hmm. And I think it's part of a larger career renaissance on the part of Lady Gaga. You know, she wore out her welcome a couple of years ago with the Art Pop album. It was a bit of a commercial disappointment, and it just seemed like Lady Gaga kept trying to top herself with new and outrageous outfits.
Right, right.
But over the past couple of years, she's reshifted her emphasis back to where it really needs to be, which is on her voice. She has an incredible voice.
Yeah, and we heard that with Tony Bennett.
She toured with Tony Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
This is a beautiful, powerful ballad. And Gaga's working on an album, and I think it's going to surprise a lot of people. And I think it's going to put the spotlight back on her talent. And our fifth and final nominee I suppose, could be called the favorite, if any of them could be, and that is Writings on the Wall, the Specter theme by Sam Smith. Earlier this month, Sam took the Best Original Song Golden Globe Award for this song, and the Golden Globes are sometimes seen as Oscar predictors. Mm-hmm. And Sam also has a bit of history on his side, because back in 2012, Adele shared the Best Original Song Oscar for Skyfall, which was the previous James Bond theme. Honestly, these are five great compositions, and may the best person win.
And if for some reason you haven't heard one or any of these, definitely check them out. You got plenty of time before the Oscars come up to hear some really great music. Somebody's going to win an award on this, and it'll be fun to see who it is. And the winner is you for joining us. Join Ray McDonald each week for the Top 20 Countdown. Ray, you're also on Twitter.
I am on Twitter at Ray on the Hits, and I posted an article about the nominees. It also includes videos of all five nominees, so you can hear and see the videos.
Definitely check that out. Ray, thanks so much for dropping by our studio.
Thanks so much, Jim.
And that's a wrap of International Edition on the Voice of America. My thanks to the director, Tracy Carter, and our program engineer, Dan Crafton. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. If you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at Michael_Lippin, spelled L-I-P-I-N. And please also tweet us at our show's Twitter handle, which is at VOA_IE. We'll see you next time.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is concerned over the crackdown on human rights lawyers in China. Several attorneys from the Beijing Fengrui law firm, who have been held in secret detention for months, have been charged with subverting state power, a charge that can carry a sentence of life imprisonment. The lawyers are among a group of dozens from the same law firm detained by authorities in July, part of an ongoing crackdown on human rights defenders and civil society activists by the regime of Chinese President Xi Jinping. Those charged include well-known attorney Wang Yu, who has defended ethnic Uyghur dissident Ilham Toti and represented several other dissidents involved in human rights activism or religious freedom issues. The director of the Beijing Fengrui law firm, Zhou Jifeng, was also charged with subversion. Other members of the firm now facing unusually long sentences include civil rights attorney Li Heping and his assistant Zhao Wei. Sophie Richardson, China director at Human Rights Watch, said the formal arrests of these rights lawyers on subversion charges means that the Chinese government now thinks that using the law to defend human rights is a subversive act against the state. She called the arrest a shocking attack on the legal profession aimed at frightening lawyers away from representing clients who are at odds with the Communist Party. U.S. Ambassador to China Max Baucus has also expressed concern over the arrests of human rights lawyers in China. In a statement last month, he noted that lawyers such as Wang Yu and Li Heping bravely fight for the legal rights of religious believers, journalists, victims of forced evictions, and women who simply want to protest sexual assault. Ambassador Baucus said they should be embraced as partners, not enemies of the government. Speaking at a press briefing about the charges of subversion now levied against the lawyers from the Beijing Fengrui law firm, State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner said, "The United States urges China to drop these charges and immediately release these lawyers and others like them detained for seeking to protect the rights of Chinese citizens."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.